House come to order. Members, please proceed to vote. To indicate your presence. I thought I'd save a few words this morning. No presence. Madam Clerk, would you please tally the board?
22 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representatives Osterman, Dyson, and Hudson have previously been excused from a call of the House today.
Those members will be shown as excused. Leading the invocation today is Major Neil Timpson of the Salvation Army. Will the members please rise for the invocation?
I'd like to share a letter with you this morning that I found in my files. Dear sir, I'm writing in response to your request for more information concerning Block 11 on the insurance form, wherein I put trying to do the job alone. You said you needed more information, so I trust the following will be sufficient. I am a bricklayer by trade, and on the day of the injury, I was working alone laying bricks on top of a four-story building when I realized that I had about 500 pounds of bricks left over. Rather than carry the bricks down, I decided to put them into a barrel and lower them down by a pulley, which was fastened to the top of the building. I secured the end of the rope at ground level and went up to the top of the building and loaded the bricks into the barrel and swung the barrel out with the bricks in it. I then went down and untied the rope, holding it securely to ensure the slow descent of the bricks. As you will note, on Block 6 of the insurance form, I weigh 175 pounds. Due to my shock, at which time being jerked off the ground so swiftly, I lost my presence of mind and forgot to let go of the rope. Between the second and third floors, I met the barrel coming down. This accounts for the bruises and lacerations on my upper body. Regaining my presence of mind, I held tightly to the rope and proceeded rapidly up the side of the building, not stopping until my right hand was jammed into the pulley. This accounts for the broken thumb. Despite the pain, I regained my presence of mind and held tight to the rope. At approximately the same time, however, the barrel of bricks hit the ground and the bottom fell out of the barrel. Devoid of the weight of the bricks, the barrels now weighed about 50 pounds. I again refer you to Block number 6 and my weight. As you would guess, I began a rapid descent in the vicinity of the second floor. I met the barrel coming up. This explains the injuries to my legs and lower body. Slowed only slightly, I continued my descent, landing on the pile of bricks. Fortunately, my back was only sprained and the internal injuries were minimal. I am sorry to report that at this point, I finally lost my presence of mind and let go of the rope. As you can imagine, the empty barrel came crashing down on me. I trust this answers your concern. Please know that I am finished trying to do the job alone. Let's pray. Lord, help us to know today that we are not doing the job alone. We have our peers in this very important place, and we have you always with us. Help these, our state leaders, to work together in a way that pleases you and makes this state of Alaska even a better place to live in the years to come. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Major Timpson. Representative Veazey, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer and the memo be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer and the memo will be spread across the journal. The clerk, please certify the journal for the previous legislative day.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 85th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent of the House Journal, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the House Journal stands approved. This brings us down to introduction of guests. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Elton.
Thanks, Madam Speaker. In the gallery behind me, the Taylor Gallery, is Major Timpson's wife, Kathy. I'd like to note that she's been with the service for 25 years, and they've been married for 19 years. And if the body would help me welcome Kathy to the gallery.
Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also have a constituent from my home area in the Taylor Gallery behind me. From Bethel is Glenda Schmierbach. She's with the Alaska Adult Education Association, and she is the legislative chairperson of that organization, and I do believe in that organization. Please help me welcome Glenda.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Goring.
I was just informed just a couple of minutes ago as I was down on my way down to the hall here that I have two constituents of mine who are serving as guest pages, and I've never met them before, so forgive me if I get the names mixed up, but we do have with us Dorothy Adams, who is from Colony High School, and Carlene Stanley from Chugiak High.
Further guests? Down to messages. Do we have messages from the other from the governor?
A message dated April 6th stating the governor has signed House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 159 Finance. It's chapter number 8, SLA 1998. I have no further messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body.
A message dated April 6th transmitting the following for consideration. CS for Senate Bill 218. Financed by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Crimes of Murder, Manslaughter, and Criminally Negligent Homicide, Relating to Homicides of Children, and Relating to the Crime of Interference with Custody of a Child or Incompetent Person.
Be referred to Judiciary and Finance.
CS for Senate Bill 234, financed by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association.
And be referred to Judiciary Committee.
CS for Senate Bill 304, rules by the Senate Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Bail or Fine for Offense Committed in a Highway Work Zone and Providing for an Effective Date.
Transportation and Judiciary.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Communications.
We received an audit report, Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Family, Youth Services, Selected Child Protection Issues. I have no further communications, Madam Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 375, Crimes Against Children, Foster Care, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 375, Hess, with a new title, attaches three fiscal notes recommending due pass, Dyson, Green, Bundy, Bryce, and Porter. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. House Bill 375 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 393, Develop Stranded Gas Resources, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 393 Resources with a new title, recommending due pass Davies, Mulder, Coring, Foster. No recommendation, Terrio, Martin, Kelly, Rusendorf, and Hanley. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. House Bill 393 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 406, Subsistent Uses of Fish and Game, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 406 Judiciary with the new title, attaches a fiscal note recommending do pass Bundy, do not pass Berkowitz, no recommendation Porter and James, amend Croft and Roeckberg. The report was signed by Bundy Vice Chair. House Bill 406 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 451, Assistive Technology and Mobility Aids, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 451 Judiciary with the same title, recommending due pass Croft, Berkowitz, James, Porter, Roeckberg, and Bundy. The report was signed by Bundy, Vice Chair. House Bill 451 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 472, Apportionment of Business Income, recommending due pass Mulder, Martin, Davis, Kelly, and Foster. No recommendation, Terrio, Davies, Grusendorf, and Moses. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. House Bill 472 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 475, Rehabilitation of Injured Workers, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending due pass Caldery, Sanders, Bryce, Ryan, and Roquefort. The report was signed by Roquefort Chair. House Bill 475 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 480, Maintenance of State Marine Vessels, recommending it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 480, Transportation, with the same title, attaching a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Caldery and Williams. No recommendation, Elton, Kukesh, Sanders, and Masick. The report was signed by Williams Chair. House Bill 480 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered Senate Bill 195, Common Law Liens, recommends being do pass Roquefort, Porter, James, Bundy, and Green. The report was signed by Green Chair. Senate Bill 195 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Special committee reports?
The House Special Committee on Oil and Gas has considered House Bill 469, Approved Sale Royalty Oil to MAPCO, recommending do pass Roquefort, Bundy, Bryce, Hodgins. No recommendation, Ryan. The report was signed by Hodgins Chair. House Bill 469 has a further referral to the Economic Development Committee. I have no further special committee reports.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Margaret Russell, 1998 Business Leader of the Year by Representative Bryce. Honoring Ann Simons, President-elect American Library Association by Senator Duncan and Representatives Elton and Hudson. Honoring Amanda Hayano by Senator Hoffman. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction.
House Bill 483. By the House Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Processors of Sport Caught Fish, requiring certain non-resident alien sport fishermen to be accompanied by a sport fishing guide and providing for an effective date.
Referred to House Special Committee on Fisheries and Resource Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 317 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee entitled An Act Relating to Investments of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The Finance Committee considered the bill attached to fiscal note recommending do pass Terrio Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Davis, and Foster. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that HB 317 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
House Bill 317 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee entitled An Act Relating to Investments of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
Under debate, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is a bill that the legislature had 3 years ago and we passed it, I think, unanimously then. And as you see from the Finance Committee, it had unanimous approval there. Basically, what we're trying to do is to get ourselves up to modern standards of the financial market. 25 years ago, when those who created the Permanent Fund program for us, which is now worth over $23 billion, they did put a rule there that limited equities to 50%. Well, now we find ourselves in a situation where we pay for the very best advice from Wall Street and L.A. and Seattle and even our Anchorage office. And then because the stock is doing so well that in the last few years they've had to literally sell hundreds of million dollars in stocks, which means that we've been losing hundreds of millions of dollars in earning just because the stock becomes more and more valuable and it comes over the 50% mark. Therefore, we lose the value there of the earnings for dividends and the earnings to increase the corpus of the permanent fund dividend. I think it's really wise now. We proved ourselves with the Board of Trustees as being very adequate. They're very good people. And we should not force them to sell our best stock just to go under a rule that's 25 years old and does need adjusting. Thank you.
Representative Easy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I don't understand the current law the way it was explained. The law says that at the time of each investment, which is your book value or your acquisition cost of your investment, I don't understand where the current law requires us to evaluate, for the purpose of this statute, the appreciated value of an asset. There could be many reasons for increasing the portion of our portfolio from 50% to 60%, but the having to sell stocks because they have appreciated in value, that simply is not the way I interpret the statute, and I certainly hope the board isn't managing under that premise, because that's not what the statute requires.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the way the statute works is that the total value that's in equities in the fund can't exceed 50%. So it's not the individual equity that's at stake, it's the total valuation of the fund. And so when we by law, can't have that equity position of the fund exceed 50%. So the investors pay attention to that, and they sell and they invest differently when we approach that limit.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to speak in favor of this bill. I had the good fortune of being on a committee that did have the opportunity to discuss with a number of financial managers how our permanent fund, corpus of the permanent fund, might be improved. And I think just the recent past on the stock market is an indication that we're missing opportunity to increase growth of the permanent fund, and we ought not to be limiting in that. This doesn't require that they invest up to 60%, but simply allows that opportunity to happen, and I strongly support the bill.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm just going to be a little bit of a counter voice here. I'm amazed when I saw a bill here that passed the Finance Committee with 10 due passes, and I've been thinking all along how I was going to stand up and oppose the bill. And I could tell you, Madam Speaker, it probably has something to do with my portfolio that doesn't do very well either. But Madam Speaker, I am concerned in that we have had a tremendous run-up in the stock market over the last number of years, and it's doubled and seems like doubled again. And we have just this week, I guess, hit new highs, gone over the 9,000 mark on the Dow. But Madam Speaker, at the same time, I noticed a lot of things happening around the world that makes me think maybe we are about to reach a peak in our stock market. When we have the chairman of Sony Corporation, one of the largest companies in the world, come out and say just 3 days ago, the Japanese economy could enter a long spiral of deflation that could have damaging effects on the world economy. When he's actually come out and said, you know, Japan is so bad off right now that they could bring the whole world into a recession. I just think that everybody sort of wanting to jump on, it seems like at the top, you know, the old contrary, you read, I'm no financial expert, but you read these things, you watch them on TV, and the contrarians, when everybody else wants to buy, right, why, that's probably the time to start selling. So I think it is prudent that we stay where we're at, that putting half of your assets into the market is probably plenty. It's not, of course, that we're spending any of those assets, Madam Speaker. They're just sitting there increasing and increasing. I'm going to vote no. I'm going to vote no because I think there has to be some conservatives left in this body, and I'll be one of them.
Representative Ryan.
Well, Madam Speaker, thank you. That was a good one. The secret of any portfolio is diversification. So you don't get nailed. Bernard Baruch, when he was questioned as to what was the secret of his success, he said, "I always sold a little sooner than I should have." Going over 50% in this market, you know, things don't always keep going forever. I have some reservations. I want to put that on the record. I think present policy is adequate the way it is. Thank you.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd rise in support of this legislation. The testimony we've heard in finance at a couple of different occasions has been very interesting. And as we've all admitted here on the floor, Madam Speaker, we're not experts. I don't think any of us are. And the testimony we received, however, was from experts. And to a person, they said this would be a good move, it'd be a prudent move. And I found it particularly interesting, Madam Speaker, as we're in light of the budgetary constraints that we're under, when they projected the growth of the permanent fund, it showed that in less than 20 years, they're projecting, with this amendment, they're projecting the permanent fund to be at over $60 billion. I think that speaks for good management, Madam Speaker.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I'm just glad the minority leader's last name isn't Greenspan. Just want to point out that the expected change in permanent fund earnings if we adopt this measure would be $70 million for this upcoming year. That translates to roughly $140 for every Alaskan. I think we ought to contemplate as we cast our vote, and in spite of the minority leader's direction, I'm going to oppose him this time.
Representative Ogun.
Madam Speaker, I just wanted to state for the record that for the second time this year, I agree with the minority leader.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I did want to point out that nothing in this bill relieves the managers of the Permanent Fund Corporation from their fiduciary responsibilities. They may invest up to 60% in the stock market if they feel it is a prudent thing to do, but they certainly are not required to.
Further debate? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I recall that not too many years ago we had a bill on this floor that allowed for the investment of the state retirement fund into gold. And at that time, that was supposed to diversify, and we were supposed to add to the retirement fund substantially. Well, what we got was a bust. And I think that, not unlike the minority leader, because I've always wanted to vote with him once, that perhaps we should consider leaving the permanent fund managed as it is today. Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Madam Speaker, it was part of the teachers' retirement fund and the state employees' retirement fund, the retirement fund of the supplemental benefits that were used and compared with the permanent fund dividend. And we see that we as legislators and state employees are doing far, far better than the permanent fund because they have much flexibility in investing your money as the market, as the world situation changes. Truly, that was a sad, sad mistake, and I remember at 2:30 in the morning trying to tell our colleagues not to vote for gold. And Oral Freeman, a good gentleman from Ketchikan, was pleading with them, don't invest in gold. Well, somehow or ever, if you look in the record, that vote was voted on four times. Normally, you get three times through the procedures. But somehow or ever, they found it at 2:30 in the morning and invested in gold. That was the legislators trying to tell them what they will do. In today's case, we've learned you don't do that. You have a board of trustees. The teachers have a board of trustees. The public employees now have their own board investment. And with the flexibility, they're not limited like we are in this old rule of investment 25 years ago. So that's the reason they're gaining 3 and 4 points more. That means probably 200, 300, 400 million more, well, I should say less, that we are losing because we are truly forcing the board to sell some of our best equities because, as the representative from Fairbanks mentioned, it's the total amount that you have, not each year that you buy. And as we found last year and the year before, they had to sell two or three, I think it was over 700 million so far of equity they had to sell just so that we can buy lower stock. I think we are fortunate in Finance Committee and maybe in Budget and Audit because we've been over these forms and we analyzed them, and none of us want to give away the people's money or lose it. We're very dedicated and owning the best money possible. And I think if people would have the chance to look at the charts, they can see, hey, we are not doing the best interests of the people. The gentleman, minority leader, mentioned Japan and Jakarta and some of these other major new emerging countries that are just getting into the modern world financing and how they have failed. Well, they're failing mainly because they've gotten in such bad debt and trying to bring themselves into the first world modern way of living that they can't afford the crash program they had in investment for paying their old bills. And Jakarta is a perfect situation in Indonesia where they have really modernized and the people were just happy as can be, but they got so heavily in debt they cannot pay. It has nothing to do really with the stock market and your investment. Same way with Japan. They've gotten heavily in debt from their advancements in modernizations It has nothing to do with the and they're borrowing. So because of the debt, not the way they invest, they're in trouble. This is a good solution for Alaska. Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the suggestion has been made that somehow it's because the market is high that we want to jump on board. And Madam Speaker, it's exactly the opposite of that. The investment strategy that our financial advisors are offering here is a long-term view. It's not a market timing view. And the long-term view is that you look at the history of the markets, it goes up and down. And if you look at a long-term investment that keeps a larger percentage in equities over time and over these market cycles, you come out far ahead by doing that. Clearly, I think the people who are advising us in terms of the permanent fund have a very long-term view. They are not, in fact, I just read some material from the last meeting. The advisors emphatically underscore that we should not be in a market timing position. We should not be trying to guess what the market's going to do, but rather we should take a very, very long-term view and stick with that investment strategy. And Madam Speaker, this proposal that's before us is put forward by those advisors to us, and I think it's good advice, and we ought to take it. Thank you.
Senator Williams?
Yes, I rise against this bill, Madam Speaker. I think the permanent fund is exactly what it says. It's a permanent fund, a trust fund for the people of the state of Alaska. When you go in and invest in a trust fund, or you go and find a trust company, usually it's very conservative. And 50% is the mark. So I think we should keep it at that, Madam Speaker. The long term, it is for a long term. We are here for the long term, and I think the way that the fund is set up now, it would be much better.
Representative Roper?
Madam Speaker, I was trying to keep my seat, but I can't. I stand in support of this bill for various reasons that have been stated here, but I think people need to recognize that currently in the investment industry, many things that are categorized as equities amount to other types of investment vehicles. That is to say, Madam Speaker, that such things as real estate investment trusts, preferred stocks, there is a multitude of various securitized financial instruments now, which are by investment bankers categorized as equities. And because of the artificial cap, and all that's all it is we have now, it's an artificial cap by statute on the asset allocation model of which the investors and managers of the permanent fund are constrained by, that we should remove that. Modern portfolio theory has always been basically 60% equities and 40% fixed income type securities. And Madam Speaker, we need to have that flexibility. And therefore, I support this. I would also add a cautionary note to the people of the state of Alaska. The investment markets right now have been in a bull market for 7.5 years. The price-earning ratios and any other method of analysis of any securities, particularly the equity side, is reaching an all-time high. There's only one period in which we've had a greater raise than 250% since 1990, and that was the period between 1923 and 1929. The market went up 354%. Madam Speaker, we're going to have a correction in the market. And when we do that, we're going to lose some money. But I think that the permanent fund management is capable enough to be able to institute the proper policies, and by voting for this bill, we'll give them the flexibility they need to make the proper choice.
Further debate? You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House pass House Bill 317? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
25 yeas, 12 nays.
And so House Bill 317 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Okay.
House Bill 459 by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee entitled An Act Relating to Medical Assistance for Certain Disabled Persons Relating to the Priorities Established for the Medical Assistance Program. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommended it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 459 Hess with a new title, recommended an additional referral to the Finance Committee, attached it four fiscal notes recommending due pass, Dyson, Green, Bundy, Porter, Kimplin, and Bryce. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommending it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 459 Finance with a new title, recommending due pass, Terry O'Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Davis, Kelly, and Foster. The report was signed by Terry O'Hanley, co-chairs. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute with a new title for HB 459 be considered adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk? I'll stand at ease. I heard you. House come back to order. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Yes, amendment number one by Representative Bryce to page 3, line 1.
Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move amendment one with a couple of technical amendments.
There is objection. Representative Bryce.
Okay, very quickly, the technical amendments. One would require a title change, so page 1, line 6, it would be delete 15th, insert 14th, and that deals with the midwifery. On page 3, line 1, where in my first delete section, I forgot to insert abusers. And then on the second insert section at the bottom of the page, I misspelled chronically. So I'm chronically misspelling chronically. What can I say? To address the amendment, frankly, Madam Speaker, 459 moved out of the House Hess without any rearrangement of the priority list that we see on page 2 and 3 of the bill. For those of you who don't know about the priority list, the lower the number, the lower the priority you are. In other words, if you're number one priority, chances of ever getting funded from coverage of Medicaid services is very minimal, which is why I believe the people moved midwifery up to the 15th priority. I don't necessarily disagree that midwifery should be moved out of the first position. I just had a basic problem with it going and being a higher priority than rehabilitative services for emotionally disturbed or chronically mentally ill adults. Those types of services are those that frankly help people maintain jobs, help them maintain some type of a resemblance of a life that we would call normal. It helps people participate in the community and be a contributing member of that community. I believe, and I could be mistaken here, but I do believe that other birth-related services are covered in, under the general provisions of Medicaid. So if it ever got to a point in time where midwives, or where we had to cut back on Medicaid, and midwife services had to be taken off, that those services would be provided under the general Medicaid program. That's not necessarily so with the mentally ill. As I was saying, I believe midwife services should be moved up the priority list. I'm just not comfortable with moving it all the way up to 15th and to a higher priority over emotionally disturbed or chronically mentally ill adults. Thank you.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm the guilty party. I made the amendment to move midwives to number 15. I don't particularly have a problem with the amendment as it exists. It's well funded. We have funding at the current levels well below this.
just briefly to explain, I think they ought to go way up the list. This is a cost-saving measure by having midwife services on here. It doesn't increase utilization. As I've said before, I don't know anyone that decides to get pregnant because they know there's midwives versus doctors that can serve them. So the previous speaker was correct in that birthing services through a doctor are covered under Medicaid. They aren't an option. They're covered, period. And so by having an option of someone to go either to a doctor or a midwife, midwives are generally less expensive. They aren't more expensive. And if someone chooses to go who is pregnant and is eligible to a midwife, they're going to save money, not cost it. So wherever it goes on the list, it made sense. They currently aren't funded because they were number one, which meant they were at the bottom of the list, first to come off. By moving them up, and I picked the number, there was no rationale, no big rationale. I tried to get some information from the department, and so I think they could go farther up, and they won't actually impact any of these services that are down below them because they are saving money, not costing money. So whether they're at 15 or 14, I don't have a particular problem with this amendment.
Representative Brown?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a partial conflict. My wife used the services of a midwife for the birth of my last child, and my daughter called me this week and told me she is to be a mother and she wants to use the services of a midwife. So just in case there's anybody out there who thinks that I may be doing something immoral, illegal, or otherwise, I want to make that statement for the record. Thank you.
Senator Bryan, you will be required to vote. Is the objection maintained on amendment number one? The objection is maintained. Further debate? Ready for the question? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
33 yeas, 3 nays.
And so amendment number one passes the House. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that CS for HB 459 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Will the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 459 Finance amended by the House Finance Committee entitled An Act Establishing New Eligibility for Medical Assistance for Certain Disabled Persons and Giving Their Eligibility for Services the Highest Priority Among optional services and groups under the medical assistance program, amending the definition of personal care services in a recipient's home as used in the medical assistance program, moving midwife services from being the first to being the 14th service eliminated under the medical assistance program when there is insufficient funding, and adjusting the priority of optional services and optional eligibility groups under the medical assistance program in order to reflect the new priorities given to the newly eligible disabled persons and to midwife services, but without otherwise changing the relative order of the other optional services and optional groups.
Debate? Representative Bundy?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This may have the record for the longest title to date in this year, but not one that I want anyone to challenge. Madam Speaker, we hear from time to time people say that when we pass legislation, someone somewhere loses some rights. And I'm happy to say in this legislation, I think that this is a win-win situation. Disabled people who are on SSI and are seeking to reenter the workforce face some obstacles to reemployment. One of those most serious obstacles is they have very high monthly medical costs often. Now, the disabled person, when they're going back to work, and most of them do want to go back to work, if at all able, they're not able to do the work that they previously did. They have to seek new jobs. These new jobs are often entry-level or part-time. As we're aware, these entry-level jobs, particularly part-time, often do not provide health insurance benefits. And so the disabled person is prevented from going to work because their medical needs will actually be greater than the income that they would be receiving from their part-time or entry-level work. Fortunately, federal law now allows recipients of SSI, or Supplemental Security Income, to continue to receive Medicaid based on two provisos, and that's addressed by this bill. One, that their earnings are insufficient to provide for the reasonable equivalent of Medicaid, and two, that the
termination of Medicaid benefits would seriously inhibit their ability to continue their employment. The federal law permits the state to provide Medicaid to disabled individuals so long as their family income does not exceed 200% of the poverty level, and as long as they contribute toward the Medicaid program by paying premiums or charges based on a sliding scale. House Bill 459, if adopted, would exercise these options that are allowed by federal law, and we've already heard the discussion regarding midwives and their services. Madam Speaker, this is a win-win bill, and I'd certainly encourage the body to support it.
Further debate? Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate seeing this piece of legislation brought before the body. As has previously been stated, what we're talking about with House Bill 459 is breaking down barriers to work. We're also talking about the intrinsic value of work and how people relate to society and how people relate to themselves, building self-esteem, being a contributing member of society. This, Madam Speaker, is a fabulous step in addressing those very simple values that people who experience a disabling effect on their body and how they relate to the rest of the state. I appreciate the work that the HES committee has done in introducing this, as well as the governor. This has been one where differences have been set aside and people have been able to work together for the betterment of the folks of the state of Alaska.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 459? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
36 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Bill 459 passes the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for House Bill 380, financed by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to a Temporary Reduction of Royalty on Oil and Gas Produced for Sale from Certain Fields Within the Cook Inlet Sedimentary Basin. We're in third reading. I have a title amendment by Representatives Terrio and Hodgins.
Representative Terrio.
Madam Speaker, I move the amendment.
Is there an objection to the amendment? Without objection, amendment number, or the title amendment is adopted. Debate, we're in third reading. You ready for the question? Question being, shall the House, Mr. Minority Leader? Representative Hodgins.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 380 is a royalty reduction for aging fields, depleted fields in Cook Inlet. Since its introduction, House Bill 380 has been amended to protect the state's interests by imposing caps on the oil and gas production from each field. The reduction is 25 million barrels of oil and 35 billion cubic feet of gas. There were no limits in the original bill. All of these oil and gas fields is named out in House Bill 380, which will qualify for a royalty reduction, were discovered more than 30 years ago and have remained undeveloped due to poor economics. House Bill 380 encourages the expedited development of the qualified oil and gas fields by providing a very short window of opportunity to begin production. Production must begin before January 1st, 2004 to qualify for this royalty reduction. The state of Alaska will receive a 5% royalty on all oil and gas production, which may not otherwise occur. And I'd like to stress that these fields have been in existence for over 30 years, and they have not produced. We have not received one nickel in royalties from the fields as they exist now. House Bill 380 has
leverage additional exploration. One of the problems that we have in Cook Inlet, and there are some areas of the field of the Cook Inlet Basin that are very dynamic, and there's oil and gas being recovered, and there's oil and gas exploration. Tyonic Deep, the old Sunfish find in the northern inlet, is an example. These fields are all in areas that there's no infrastructure. There's no infrastructure to bring on board the oil and gas that is presently there. The idea behind the behind 380 is to give an incentive so that we can hopefully find a little bit more oil, so that we can actually get some revenue flowing in. One of the things that I'd like to point out is down in the Homer area, down in Anchor Point, where three of these fields are, there is gas that's been found at North Fork, in the Anchor Point area. That gas, Madam Speaker, the best and highest use for that natural gas would be to gasify Homer. Anchor Point is too far south out of the industrial area for a pipeline to be economically feasible. These fields are close to being shut in. These fields are not producing. This bill will give some incentive, hopefully, for folks to go in and do some production, do some more exploration to find out what the fields are. I would like to point out that it takes between 30 and 40 million barrels of oil to justify a platform. One of these fields would require an offshore platform. Not only would it require the offshore platform, but it would require the pipeline to get the product to shore, to production. While we might be giving a royalty reduction on one hand, any pipelines or platforms that go into the area would be covered under the ad valorem tax. The state of Alaska has the ability to recover dollars. The state of Alaska has the ability to give an incentive. This incentive, if it works, will create jobs, will create revenues for the state that we're not now receiving. And I would certainly be open to answer any questions. And I would urge my colleagues to help my area out in some of the industry that's depleted, some of the industry that needs help, and to help me create some jobs in the Kenai Peninsula area. Thank you.
Let's stand at ease. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I am certainly very sympathetic to the sponsor of this legislation and trying to help his area in resource development, as we have, as a state, received quite a bit of resources or income from the resources in the Kenai Peninsula, and I hope we can do more in the future. Madam Speaker, I'm concerned, though, that what this bill does is sort of interjecting the state legislature here and making a determination of what fields warrant a royalty reduction without going through some kind of an economic process or evaluation. I mean, I am all for doing everything that we can do to get more resources out of the ground, especially oil, because obviously that's the place where we're making the most money. But my understanding is if this was to go through and they were to make their up to their limit of the 25 million barrels, that this would cost the state of Alaska and more specifically the permanent fund as much as $75 million, and yet we haven't even done an analysis of whether this is warranted or not. And the other side of the coin, Madam Speaker, is I don't understand if we're going to give somebody a break from their lease to try to get something to developed, why we wouldn't have something on the other end that if, one, the price went up substantially, let's say we're back to $30 oils in 3 or 4 years, or the quantity increased far more than what was expected, why we don't have something where we get our money, in essence, our investment back that we put in at the beginning. So, Madam Speaker, I am sympathetic to what the sponsor of this bill wants to do. I'd like to
to support him in doing what he wants to do, but I think somebody has to watch out for the state of Alaska overall and make sure we're not just giving away, in essence, money. Money out of our general fund, which we're in dire need for. Money out of the permanent fund, which is going to help fund us in the future. And so, Madam Speaker, if the sponsor of this would work on those two issues, or at least one of those two issues, then I would be more than willing to vote for the bill. But without one of those two issues, I'm afraid I can't.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a lot of the concerns that the minority leader has, but I guess it wraps up into one question for the sponsor of the bill. Why 5%? I mean, it seems to me that you're dealing with six different fields here that you've identified, and surely the economic situation is not identical in each. As I understand it, all we know about these really is that they haven't been developed. We don't know at what level of royalty relief they would be developed. In short, we don't have any economic analysis to justify 5% for one. Maybe it only takes a royalty relief of bringing it down to 10% in one. Maybe in another, you'd have to give away all the royalty to get this developed. It doesn't seem to me that the 5% bears any relation to any known economics of these six fields, or at least that's not in the record before us. And secondly, 5% may be appropriate for all six of these. I somehow doubt that it would identically apply. But if it did, under this current factual situation now, that is, 5% may be appropriate at $13 oil. But is it appropriate at $20 or $25 oil? So how did we get to 5%, and how can we know that 5% applies to all these six fields equally well and for all time equally well?
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to associate myself with the remarks of the prior two speakers. They expressed essentially exactly what my concerns are. Madam Speaker, I do not object to giving incentives like this. I think that we ought to. But, Madam Speaker, at the same time, I believe that we ought to be fiscally prudent and protect the state in the case where either the volume or the price estimates are wrong and that the fields outperform what our expectations are. In those cases, the state should expect to get some return for the consideration that we gave. And Madam Speaker, the other point that I wish to raise, a technical thing, these aren't depleted fields. They're just fields that haven't been explored yet, so that they don't technically fall in that category. But the real issue, Madam Speaker, is yes, it's true that these fields were first offered for at least 30 years ago, but Madam Speaker, the people that are in lobbying and campaigning for this royalty reduction, for this consideration, didn't buy these leases 30 years ago. They bought them 5 years ago or less. Madam Speaker, they've not only that, but they've been doing a lot of, there's a lot of discussion in the oil journals about engineering that's gone on and things like that to develop these fields. And Madam Speaker, they've contracted to do a great deal of very modern 3D seismic work out there. Madam Speaker, it doesn't sound to me like these fields are lying fallow, that there's a lot of interest in them, that there's investment being undertaken as we speak and within the last few years. In short, there's substantial interest in these fields, and so the argument that somehow that we need to have this royalty break to induce this investment is not true on the face of it. The investment is going on without this break. So, Madam Speaker, without the economic analysis that justifies it, without some protection on the upside, I just don't think that we can look the people of the state of Alaska in the eye and say we protected their resources. We can't be so open for business, Madam Speaker, that we leave the people's wallets open. Thank you.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. We are stewards for all the resources of Alaska, for all the people of Alaska. And I, as much as anyone here, favor developing Alaska's resources with the proper incentive package. Well, this bill asks us to take 7.5% of the royalty share from Alaska's people. And for that 7.5%, what do we get? We get nothing. We get no graduated rate of return. We get no understanding that these fields will be developed. I feel when we ask Alaskans to give something up, we ought to be able to deliver something in return. That's prudent economic business. What I find distressing about the way this bill is proceeded is we have not seen a good economic analysis of why these fields aren't being developed to the satisfaction of the sponsor. I would like to know where that analysis is, because when that analysis comes, I might well change my position, but I don't think it's prudent or a proper exercise of my fiduciary responsibility to give something away without knowing what I'm going to get.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. I am not classified or anybody in here as a prudent expert or prudent professional, but I consider myself to be a prudent person. And I agree with many statements that were made on this floor here that we definitely want to encourage the development of our resources in this state. But at the same time, we have certain responsibilities. And through my readings, my understanding is that this firm, to use their term, is very bullish in regards to their development in the Cook Inlet, and that indeed these leases have exchanged hands and there's activity that are going to take place in the Cook Inlet region, Cook Inlet Basin. And that leads us to, if we come in at this point in a project that's already going to go, have we really created new jobs? Have we really created new taxation for local governments? We certainly would be losing from the state's point of view, and the national government from their tax structure would benefit. But I guess the question comes down to, you know, we have not really had the necessary economic evaluation of this. In other words, there's no clear and convincing evidence that this need is required for the development of these fields. And one of the things that lead me to this conclusion, one of several, is that we do not have on hand in DNR the 3D seismic reports. And it was supposed to be part of the original agreement with the unit aspect of it when they came in and agreed to develop a unit. Instead, it was said that they should develop these 3D studies, 3D seismic studies. And granted, before we make a decision like this, you'd think that the department should have access to these 3D dimensional seismic things to determine what it is. And we talk in terms of proven fields. Well, Madam Speaker, that is not what we classify as the total reserve. Proven fields is what they, you know, basically are saying, this is what we can do economically. It certainly isn't the size of the field. Another question has come to my attention is that these fields have not been delineated. We don't know the extent of these fields, and of course we might come close to understanding this, you know, the extent if we knew what the 3D seismic reports are on this. The question of what about the upside? This is an important aspect to the state. You know, if we are going to be willing to sacrifice 7.5% royalty, what if there is an upside? Should there be a cap there that anything over $13 a barrel, then the whole structure changes? Because we have a lot to lose in this. And most of you know that we can range from 25 to 50% of all the royalties that come off these fields go into the permanent fund. So from the point of view as trustees of the people's resources and the people's money, we have a certain obligation to analyze it and say, is there clear and convincing evidence that there is a need? And Madam Speaker, from what I can see at this point, no, there is not clear and convincing evidence. The Department of Natural Resources have not got the information they need to even comment on this, other than to give us tables in regards to what the potential loss of royalty oil would mean to the state of Alaska. So I hope that other members keep this in mind, that yes, we want to stimulate industry and develop our resources, but at the same time, when we do so, don't you think that we should have all the information to do it right? And I maintain, Madam Speaker, at this point in time, we do not have the information to make an intelligent decision on this, which for a prudent person doesn't make sense to me and cannot support it. And by the way, the prudent professionals indicate that this is not a good idea at this time either. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Hodgins?
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. The economic analysis has been 30 years that these fields, that they've known that there's been hydrocarbons there, and they haven't gone after them. They haven't gone after them because they're in remote locations, they're far from the infrastructure. 30 years of economic analysis. If there was a dollar in it, they would have been developed. The history of the leases. There's areas out in Cook Inlet that have been leased and released and leased and released 8 to 10 times, more than that. It's a constant turnover of leases. Oil companies go in, they buy a block of leases, and they go in for exploration. The 3D seismic. There has been no request from the department, from the state of Alaska, for the 3D requirement. The legislator from District 2 has taken something out of context in the fact that there was a person in oil and gas that thought that they had been requested, and they have not been requested. 3D seismic will not tell you if there's oil or gas. 3D seismic will just tell you if there's a formation that might have oil and gas in it. As far as the permanent fund, Madam Chairman, we have received nothing from these fields in 30 years going to our permanent fund. Nothing at 12.5%. I'd like to receive something at 5% rather than nothing at 12.5%. As far as where the 5% figure came from, I'd like to draw people's attention to a statute, 3805-180, Section G, fourth paragraph, if I may read this, Madam Speaker. The lessee under a lease issued in the Cook Inlet sedimentary basin, who is the first to file with the commissioner a non-confidential sworn statement claiming to be the first to have drilled a well discovering oil or gas in a previously undiscovered oil or gas pool, and who is certified by the commissioner within 1 year of completion of that discovery well to have drilled a well in that pool that is capable of producing and paying quantities, shall pay a royalty of 5% on all production of oil and gas from that pool attributable to that lease for a period of 10 years following the date of discovery of that pool. Madam Speaker, there is no upward limit. We've got an upward limit on House Bill 380. There is legislation right now in Cook Inlet that allows 5% royalty, that allows no upper limit, that allows 10 years of production with at the 5%, unlimited. This has a cap. This protects the state. This gives an incentive for the oil companies to go out and hire people, hire Alaskans, to try to come up with some revenue that'll go into our permanent fund, that'll go into our state coffers. These are six fields that have not been delineated. No, they haven't. In the history of Cook Inlet, when they went out to discover where the fields were, they just put holes all over the place. They put holes as far down as Inniskan Bay, further than that. They put holes down on either side of Cook Inlet, out in the inlet, trying to discover where the fields were. If they hit oil, if they did other holes to try to figure out how big the field was, where the concentration was. These fields are not delineated. I agree with that. But they are very small fields. They are very far from the infrastructure. They will be very expensive to prove up in production. It is extremely important that we look at Cook Inlet, the Cook Inlet Basin is declining in production. There'll be a time that Cook Inlet will no longer be producing. They have shut-in platforms right now that sit out there. They'd get 250 barrels a day before they shut them down. They keep them on a reserve active basis so they don't have to remove the platforms. Some of these fields that are in House Bill 380 are 50 miles away from the closest infrastructure. This is not in the heart of the Cook Inlet Basin. This is not where the majority of oil is. This would give an incentive for six specific fields. The Redoubt Shoals is offshore. It's the only one that would be offshore. It would take 30 to 40 million barrels of oil to put a rig there. They indicate that there's probably 9 to 11 million barrels there. That is not enough oil to put in a platform. we want a platform there, we should offer a little bit of incentive. With that, Madam Speaker, I would I hope I've answered most all the questions. There is one other thing that I'd like to say. There has been no commitments to develop any of these fields that are listed in House Bill 380. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
I'll stand at ease. Further debate? Representative Roakberg?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have the pleasure of serving on the Oil and Gas Committee and had an opportunity to go through several hearings on this particular bill. And I want to stand in support of the bill for a couple of reasons that I don't think have been properly answered here on the floor. Number one, among the critics of the bill was suggested that there's other alternatives for royalty relief under existing statutory scheme. And Madam Speaker, as one of the authors of House Bill 207, and I would underline the House bill, it seems to me that this bill is a response to the failure of House Bill 207 to do what was intended to be done, and that is to stimulate the investment and development of marginal fields. And the reason, Madam Speaker, I'd say that House Bill 207 has been a failure is the empirical evidence we have of the application made by UNICAL to the Department of Revenue almost 2 years ago, in which there's been a failure of a meeting of the minds on that particular application, because, Madam Speaker, I'd suggest that the senior body did a certain modicum of violence to that bill when they amended our version and frankly made it almost so complicated nobody can figure out how to apply it in the real world.
Representative Roakberg, I must caution you to limit your debate to this bill, not a bill that had been previously discussed and passed by both the bodies, if you would please.
Madam Speaker, I'll speak to Section 180J then of our statutes, which this would be a part of, which includes the provisions of that bill. At any rate, Madam Speaker, my point is this. It's been the policy of the legislature and the administration to try to encourage the development of marginal fields. This bill is intended to do that because clearly we know, because these fields have sat fallow for 30 years, that they have not demonstrated their economic potential. And on the other hand, there's no other relief in sight. Because of the difficulties in the existing statute to apply to these fields, it's just not workable. And so, therefore, I would support this. I mean, there can be other arguments made. I would also like to correct one other thing. Of the six fields that are stipulated in this bill, there's been several comments made here this morning that these have all changed hands and like there's an implication of new ownership and so forth. Well, that's not true. As a matter of fact, a number of these fields have been in the same ownership for literally decades or numbers of years. And so there's perhaps a couple that have had relatively recent changes of ownership. However, I think that there is a volumetric cap on the total amount of petroleum product, gas, and oil that could be lifted from these particular fields. And that gives me a certain amount of comfort. You can make the argument that they could be lower, higher, or whatever. And one other thing, Madam Speaker. There is some discussion, too, about the alleged arbitrariness of the 5%. I think the sponsor answered that adequately, but I go further to saying that under our existing statutory scheme, if we had a system that would actually work, the lower threshold of some of these particular things are as low as 2 to 3%. So using the 5%, which we've applied not only in the discovery credit, which is mentioned, but I also believe in the exploration licensing areas, that we can, I have certain comfort with that. With that, Madam Speaker, I will ask that everybody support this bill.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the argument has been made that the
fact that these fields have lain fallow for 30 years is the economic analysis. But, Madam Speaker, I renew my argument that the fact that there's economic investment going on those fields within the last 5 years by people who purchased them recently within the last 5 years would suggest the opposite conclusion of the economic analysis. It would suggest that the economic analysis is that this incentive is unneeded. With respect to the 5%, that's in the statute, that is a case for discovery incentive. That's a case of very high-risk circumstance where we're trying to provide incentive for somebody to go out and drill a well in a new area, in a discovery area. Madam Speaker, that's a high-risk proposition. This is a case where there are some proven reserves already known. They haven't been delineated, so we don't know how big those reserves actually might be. But, Madam Speaker, certainly it's known that there's oil here, so that in the oil fields, there's only two of these six that are oil fields, actually. But I'm speaking mainly to that situation. Madam Speaker, to suggest that somehow there's a relationship between the high-risk environment of discovery and the known situation where we have proven reserves just simply doesn't stand up. And, Madam Speaker, even if you granted all of that, even if you granted every single thing that's been said, why would we not put some upside protection? Granted that we need the incentive to go out there, granted that the incentive should be 5%, why not put a price limit in at $30 a barrel? Why not say if the price would go up next year and the price volume analysis would suggest that we totally, that given that new estimate of volume, new estimate of price, that the incentive we gave was totally unnecessary, why wouldn't we try to recover our incentive investment? Why wouldn't we protect the people of the state of Alaska, in short, if our assumptions about the economic future are too doom and gloom, and in fact it turns out to be rosier than everybody thought? This, Madam Speaker, that's a win-win circumstance. We've still provided the incentive, we've still got the new investment in place, and everybody benefits. Why do we not allow for the possibility for the people of Alaska to share in that benefit? It makes no sense.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The previous speaker covered a point or two that I wanted to make about the discovery royalty was simply on a pool, not an entire field. I did carry that legislation on the floor in the last session. I guess I have to agree that I'd have some more comfort level with this bill if there was some kind of an upside in it. Either prices of oil were higher, or once capital investments were amortized, there was a full royalty. However, having put that on the record, I will be voting for the bill, and I unfortunately just did not have a Resources Committee referral, and we didn't get the opportunity to work on it there. So I will be a yes vote, though, however.
Representative Kelly? Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this bill. However, several times this morning, the word fallow has been used as it relates to the wells in Cook Inlet, and I believe that they're shut-in wells and have been shut in for some 30 years. Fallow relates to land and lack of growing things on them, I do believe. And, Madam Speaker, I think that it is very important, especially in Cook Inlet, that we develop these wells because, as you know, there's some discussion about the lack of a long-term supply of energy in Cook Inlet, and there is considerable debate at this time over whether or not we should stop one company from exporting or developing fertilizer to export because of the debate over whether or not these shut-in fields should be developed. So I hope everyone will support the bill.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you. I was waiting to get that response on the 5% question, and I appreciate the sponsor giving me some. I guess my concern still is the only rationale for 5% I heard was that we'd use that as a sort of finder's fee on a whole new exploratory well in other areas of statute. It seems in a purely exploratory, you can be somewhat arbitrary in the bonus. But when you're doing it based on an economic rationale, that they know it's there, but they need this in order to make it economically viable, that you need some more support, something to support that 5%, and certainly some way for the state to share in its upside. I guess just in conclusion, I'd say that I think the state should be open for business, but I don't think we should be giving away the merchandise.
Further debate? Representative Corin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise for this legislation. For the House Finance Committee, I did hear this bill at length, and I think it's a real good piece of legislation. I want to thank the sponsor for forwarding this, and I did actually co-sponsor the bill as well. Madam Speaker, I think we should be more concerned about generating economic development as opposed to what the state might lose in revenues with this legislation. I look at the Kenai Peninsula and their high unemployment rate. I was told by the sponsor that unemployment rate is about 17%. And I certainly feel for people who really struggle financially. I've been in that situation before. A lot of my constituents in the Mat-Su are in that boat as well. And I think we owe it to them to do what we can as legislators to develop a real strong economy. And I see this legislation as contributing to that. I think people certainly have a right to be able to support their families with good paying jobs. And I'd love to have this opportunity in the Mat-Su if we had these kind of resources available to us. Also, to address the issue of the potential for higher oil prices and larger amounts of oil that might be found if these fields are further developed, I don't think that should be too much of a preoccupation on our part. Again, it goes back to being more concerned about generating a good, strong economy as opposed to being too preoccupied with oil royalties that the state might generate. I also wanted to point out that these companies are taking a risk. And I think they should be the beneficiary of any increased monies they might generate from this legislation. After all, Madam Speaker, they're the ones that own these leases, and they're the ones that are investing the capital. So I think it should be part of a free market process. Lastly, I'd like to just point out that any chance that we can get as legislators, in my mind, to decrease taxes on industry and individuals, we should certainly take advantage of. In my mind, also, low taxes and low regulations are the keys to strong private sector economic growth. Thanks very much.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this legislation. There's been a lot of discussion about sharing data, and hopefully maybe that'll happen. And, of course, if that does happen, maybe this 5%, maybe the administration will offer it to go down to 2% or maybe zero. As indicated, these oil fields have been there for a while. They've even been drilled. The leases have been some leases have been transferred. They've even been drilled, and no production has happened. So, you know, it's a risk. Everything we do here is a risk. But I think from the data that was supplied us in Finance Committee, I think it's a risk worth taking. I think if there was knowledge that there is opportunity, additional opportunity than what the legislation offers, I think that would have been brought out. That was not brought out. The department did not say we know anything. They are certainly looking for additional data to increase their comfort level, as will everybody. But hopefully, when and if additional data is shared, this 5% may look even a little high. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? I think everybody has spoken. Representative Davies.
You're just on an issue to correct the record. It was stated that somehow this is reducing taxes on the industry. Madam Speaker, this is not an issue of taxes. This is royalty. Royalty is in respect to the share that the Alaskan people own in their resources. And, Madam Speaker, I would remind the body that we swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the Constitution said that we would maximize the benefit to all the people from our resources. And, Madam Speaker, I submit that this proposed legislation does not provide for that protection.
Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 380? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
26 yeas, 11 nays.
And so House Bill 380 has passed the House. Representative Hodgins?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I'd like to serve a notice of reconsideration and ask unanimous consent to bring up my reconsideration on the same day.
There is objection. I'll stand at ease, and we're going to take a five-minute at ease. 5 minutes. We'll be right back. Come back to order. Motion before the body is to take up reconsideration of House Bill 380 on the same date. Debate? I'll stand at ease. Representative Hodgins?
Yes, Madam Speaker, I'd withdraw my motion for reconsideration.
Motion has been withdrawn. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for House Bill 462, State Affairs, by the House State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Contents of Certain State Documents. We're in third reading.
Debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill...
I tried.
This bill attempts to clearly differentiate between publications of certain state agencies where it is, in my opinion, inappropriate for an elected official to place his likeness or a message, whether it be personal or political in nature, and those publications that is appropriate. Certainly all of us with our individual stationery that has our name on it, and I know there are some members in the body that have a picture on their stationery. That stationery is bought with state money, but it's budgeted for that purpose, to get out the individual message from our offices to our constituents. In addition, many of us send out newsletters, and I think it probably is appropriate that the newsletter from our office would contain information supporting and highlighting the actions that we take in this body. However, as elected officials, I think it's inappropriate for us to have access to put that type of message on an ongoing state publication or a programmatic publication. The bill primarily deals with the permanent fund dividend application and the longevity bonus check stub. It would disallow information, a likeness or picture, or a personal message on either of those publications from an elected official. Certainly for the thousands of individuals in the Fairbanks area, if I on a monthly basis could send them a message on their longevity bonus check stub, I would love to do so. However, I think that is inappropriate, using that as a vehicle to get that type of message out. If it is inappropriate for me and other members in this body, I think it probably is inappropriate for any elected official, and this legislation would draw that line. And with that, I'll answer questions if there are any.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. This very obvious is a very important piece of legislation. We can tell this by the fact that it's sponsored by the Finance Committee. And there are some major concerns. I guess the issue is saving face or losing face. And you know, it's kind of curious that, Madam Speaker, would you get some order in this body? Madam Speaker, it is kind of curious. Without a doubt, the governor of this state indeed is very photogenic, and there is problems. I understand that some people are cutting out these little pictures and putting them on their refrigerators and even discussing laminating it. But it does direct towards elected state officials, and I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, maybe if we had Jim Ayers, provided he had a happy face on, you know, that might be acceptable. Madam Speaker, this individual that I mentioned is not an elected official nor a member of this body, even though he probably would like to be the number 41st vote on it. Then I thought, well, how about Pat Porchot, you know, legislative liaison, that would fit well. He's got kind of a face that's friendly and, you know, gives some confidence to it. But then I think my favorite, you know, with that cherub pixie-like face, would be Anna Lee. Now, that would a picture, you know, that I would have some confidence in. Now, looking at the legislation that we have before us, and most of these are constitutional resolutions to strip the power of the governor, everything from reapportionment to what he is able to do, I think one of the last vestiges, at least like in England, there should be kind of a titular thing where the sovereign at least has his picture on certain things. I know what the sponsor is aiming at. Perhaps it's kind of a humanitarian view that he has on it, thinking on his part, wishful thinking, that maybe in November there would be a change. And definitely I don't think we'd want to remind and scare the public from that point on with other publications. Madam Speaker, I really don't know what to say about this piece of legislation, favorably or against. I guess I will not make a recommendation and use the representative in front of me, the freedom of conscience. Thank you.
Representative Ogun.
Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this legislation. I think one of the most unfortunate misuses of this has been clearly political messages put on the checks of longevity bonus checks by the governor, putting fear into their hearts, and that practice should not be allowed to continue. Thank you.
Senator Bryan?
Yes, Madam Speaker, I'd like to bring the attention of this body. In certain European jurisdictions where they have a monarch, be a king or a queen, that individual is sovereign, but in the United States of America, the individual is sovereign. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Bundy.
Well, that's the last comments brought to mind that I need to support this bill now, because when I point out the emperor has no clothes, I sure don't want any pictures of it.
Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 462? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
27 yeas, 9 nays.
And so House Bill 462 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
There's citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us down to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from a call of the House for the following times. Basically, that Representative Handley's previously excused time return of 9:30 a.m. p.m. plain time Tuesday, April 14th, be amended to 1:57 p.m. plain time Tuesday, April 14th, and that Representative Roper's previously excused return of 9:26 p.m. plain time Monday, April 13th, is amended to 9:45 a.m. plain time Tuesday, April 14th.
Further unfinished business?
Approval?
Oh, without objection, those absences will be approved. Further unfinished business? Committee announcements? Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's now 1 o'clock, which is a scheduled time for resources, and we will meet in half an hour, 1:30. Thanks.
Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The House Finance meeting that was noticed for this evening will not be held. However, tomorrow evening we will be taking public testimony on House Bill 406. That is a subsistence bill. The committee may tomorrow afternoon get the first committee discussion and introduction to the bill. But for those people out in the public that did want to testify, I wanted a specific time. So that will be the meeting tomorrow evening, starting at 7.
Representative Ivan.
Thank you. House CRA meets tomorrow, April 8 at 8 a.m. to address House Bill 471, Regional Native Housing Authority. Thank you.
Further committee announcements? Representative Grusendorf?
Very brief at ease.
House stand at ease. Announcements? General announcements? Special orders? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Press permission to speak. I'm being shut out.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Madam Speaker, since the day I got here as Minority Leader, I have done everything I can to work with you on all the issues that come before this body, and I was very distressed to watch yesterday on our TV how we get to watch committee meetings and actions, and with the absence of the Judiciary Chairman, the direction that we appear to be taking now on subsistence. Madam Speaker, we have...